So let me welcome all of you one and all. Some of the members will join us here. We've got apologies from Agrapo and Mr. Farrell from the DA and Mr. Ensley, who's still in KwaZulu-Natal. But otherwise, some members will still join us, as you can see. I think I suppose it's like a Friday, so it's close. one of the members, I just called him now to say, hey, we're waiting for you. He's actually forgotten about me. Oh, I'm in the ATC, the Parliament, but we have some other debates. So on Friday we do make, Fridays we do make allowance for such movements. Prof, I'm not sure you are the only one today, so we'll give you time to take us through, and thanks for sending us this in advance, quite useful, but we'll give you the benefit of taking us through your business plan, and allow members to engage with it. But so far, so good. I mean, we've never had major problems with you, otherwise we'll be roasting you today in that game, like we sometimes do to others. Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you very much for this opportunity to come and present the Academy's business plan to you. For us, it's always a great pleasure to have the opportunity to come and engage with this committee, and we look forward to some discussion. I would just like to introduce the individuals who are with me. On my right is Dr. Tola Marty, who is our operations officer. On my right is Professor Roseanne Dyer, who is our newly appointed executive officer. And on her left is Mr. Morakeng Malachi, who is our finance officer. And I'm also very pleased this morning to have Dr. Andrew Kaniki from the National Research Foundation here this morning. Because we regard the National Research Foundation as one of our natural partners. The Chair, what I would like to do is to just take you through the highlights of your business plan to give you a feel.
Yeah, no, let's pull this out first, otherwise...
I'm going to be strange.
Yeah, I know. Why do they always start now when you're supposed to be a kid? Unless you organize. I must say that our organization is that the National Research Foundation, throughout the hearings that we've had, there has been some recapping. Thank you very much. Keep it that way. Yeah. We've had several of your delegations coming to just listen, and we did even go to the extent of giving them some 2 minutes to say anything they wanted to say. Just to recognize that we are to acknowledge their presence. So thanks, Prof. Looks like we can
Thank you, Chair. Let me just give you a brief outline of the way in which the presentation is going to be structured. I'll give you a brief introduction to the vision statement, the mission statement. Then we'll have a look at the financial objectives for 2008-2009, the consolidated budget for 2008 and 2009. And then also the Academy received some support from the United States National Academies of Science, which is running a program to develop the activities of Academies of Science in Africa, and I'll briefly report on that. And then I will report on the four programs into which the Academy of Science's activities are organized to give you an insight into what we do. So in essence, just to give you an overview of what the Academy aspires to do, aspires to be the engine of academic excellence and intellectual cooperation in the country. And what is very important for the Academy is to have recognition internationally and to be connected with the International Academies of Sciences. And I'll say a little bit more about that later in the presentation. The membership of the Academy, we try to include all of the active scholars in all fields into the Academy. So our Academy of Science is relatively unique in the world Academies of Science in that it doesn't focus only on the natural sciences, but includes people in all fields. And as a consequence of that, we essentially see ourselves as being a brain trust for the nation. So we attempt to elect to the membership those individuals who are outstanding in their field of expertise, whatever that field of expertise is, and then to include them in this brains trust that we call the Academy of Science. And then we hope that this brains trust can be used to generate evidence-based solutions for national problems. I think that I should also point out that academies are different from science councils in that they don't undertake research of their own. What they do is they review the research that's been undertaken by others and then produce these evidence-based reports that can be used to guide the way in which various problems can be addressed. The mission of the Academy is to be associated with the highest levels of scholarly achievement. Internationally, academies usually guard fairly jealously their membership, and that the members are the people who are regarded as excellent in their scientific field. In our own Academy, we've expanded the notion of what excellence means, because in other academies, they generally focus only on the disciplinary excellence. But what we're concerned about is not only the disciplinary excellence that people have, but the extent to which they apply that knowledge and expertise for the benefit of society. So we've broadened the scope of the criteria we use for election of people to membership, and we annually give awards for people who have made a specific contribution to applying scientific knowledge in its broad sense for the benefit of society. At the moment, the Academy is a relatively young organization. Many of the other academies have been around for centuries. We've been around for a decade. And as a consequence of that, we're consolidating our infrastructure and capacity at the moment. And we're using that to expand and mobilize our membership. So that we can actually cover the full spectrum of disciplines that are important for addressing issues. And the main activity of the Academy is to embark on systematic studies of evidence-based issues which are of national importance. And so I'll say a little bit more about some of the studies that we've completed. And also give you an indication of some of the studies that we intend to undertake in this coming year. And the other thing that the Academy has been doing in collaboration with our United States partners is developing an appropriate methodology for actually undertaking these studies, because the worth of the studies depends on the methodology you use and the confidence that people can have in the methodology and the authority of the reports that you produce. So in essence, we're developing those activities. In addition to the membership and the studies, the Academy also has a publishing arm, and it publishes the South African Journal of Science, which is a multidisciplinary journal of high quality, and it has international standing, which I'll come back to a little bit later. In addition, we publish a science magazine which is called Quest, and that the subtitle of that is Science for South Africa. It's a science magazine in which we try to showcase the best of South African research to a wide national audience and also an international audience. The most important objective of this is to transmit the idea that discoveries in science happen locally. They're not something that happens somewhere else and then we just make use of it. So I think what we're trying to do is to understand that, to give an understanding of the fact that science happens very effectively here in South Africa and can contribute significantly to economic development, and this is the magazine that I've been talking about. And you'll see later in the presentation that we are discussing with the Department of Education, ensuring that the magazine gets into a significant number of high schools. And then the third of the publishing arm is the publication of our strategic report, which I alluded to a little earlier. The other thing that the Academy is involved in at the moment is that we want to promote the development within South Africa of an indigenous system of research journals that are recognized, and we'll come on to that in a little while. We are also in the process of developing and maintaining productive departments, productive partnerships, of course, with what I suppose I should describe as our mother department, which is the Department of Science and Technology, which has offered the Academy major support, including providing space for us in the DST building. But we also have ongoing relationships with the Department of Education, the Department of Health, Water Affairs and Forestry, Environmental Affairs and Tourism and Agriculture. And of course, we share space in the DST building with the with NACI, and so we have regular interactions with them. We also have significant collaborative linkages with the Science Councils, and during the course of last year, the Academy was asked to take on the Secretariat of Cohort, and Cohort is the body that's the umbrella body for all of the Science Councils. So we act as the Secretariat for that body on behalf of the Science Council. We also interact with non-government organizations, educational institutions, and all of these interactions are in a sense to build the capacity in science and technology and its applications within the system, the national system of innovation. I think that the another thing that the members should be aware of is that we're in the process of creating new and diversified sources of funding in order to sustain the functions of the Academy, because the Academy undertakes a number of activities, and we believe that those activities need to be essentially self-funding, and so we're in the process of raising additional funds for the Academy's activities. We believe that we should become much more active in communicating effectively with the general public and with specific public who may be our partners and sponsors. We also believe that it's very important for us to expand our activities in partnership with other national science academies, particularly science academies in other countries on the continent. Because we believe that those relationships can be very powerful in developing science and technology. And at a recent meeting that was held in Addis Ababa a month or two ago, our academy was elected as the vice president of the Network of African Academies of Science. We also, in the partnership with National Science Academies, are in a partnership with the National Academies of Sciences of the United States. The partnership involves a program which is funded by the Gates Foundation and involves support for the Academy of Science of South Africa, the Academy of Science in Nigeria, and the Academy of Science in Uganda, and a couple of weeks ago we visited the Gates Foundation to attempt to gain additional funding to support other academies to develop their activities along the lines that our academy and the other academies, Uganda and Nigeria, are doing at the moment. And they seem to be quite well disposed to the idea of making funding available for us. We also see it as our role to, as one of our roles, is to be a significant player in the international science system. I've mentioned our interactions within the continent, but I also think that the members should be aware of our other activities which relate to international academy organizations. The IAC is the inter-academy panel, which is a grouping of approximately 100 academies of science from 100 different countries. We participate actively in their program, and we sit on the reviewing committee for proposals from that group. We've also been actively involved in the inter-academy panel, the inter-academy medical panel, the IAMP. The co-chair of that academy is one of our members, Professor Tony Mbewu, and we have a significant program going on in collaboration with them, which is to do with developing skills in scientific writing to enable people who are undertaking research and scientific activities on the continent are able to translate that into publication. We are also a member of the GH+5 group of academies, and these academies meet regularly before the GH+5 meetings with presidents in order to analyze in which issues the academies which place on the agenda of that meeting. I think unsurprisingly, the two items that they're suggesting which should be placed on the agenda of the meeting in Japan next month has to do with global health, and is the one issue, and the second issue has to do with energy and climate change. So those are certainly issues which touch us very closely. And then a third issue which is being placed on the agenda by the Network of African Academies of Science is the question of the development of science and technology institutions on the continent. So I think those give you some indications of our international activities. We are quite involved with the Academy of Science for the Developing World, so-called TOS. We have an ongoing interaction with them. And then, of course, we have a very strong interaction with the Network Academy of Science, which undertakes activities mostly in the context of NEFED and its Science and Technology Committee. So if I could come to our financial objectives for 2008, we need to implement the intentions in this strategic plan to diversify and stabilize the sources of income for the academy. We need to bring our financial operations to a high degree of efficiency, and in order to achieve that, we've now appointed a full-time financial officer, Mr. Malachi. And I think that one of our specific objectives is to continue our unbroken record of unqualified external audit reports.
I want you to repeat that.
Unbroken record of unqualified external audit reports. That is certainly one of the major objectives and one of the major oversight issues which the council sees it as well. The council has just established during the course of the last financial year a financial group which oversees the actual financing of the academy. And then to execute and manage projects as cost effectively as possible and deliver the highest quality and value to our sponsors. I should mention that the Academy is rather unique in that the only paid members of the Academy are its officers. All of the members provide, including the members of council, provide their services free of charge. And you'll see in a moment when I come onto the budget, when we presented the budget to the minister, he said it was extraordinary that we were able to do what we did with so little money. And I think partly it is because the membership and the members of council provide their services without remuneration.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wonder if I can ask your indulgence. Before we go on to the actual budget, which has got a lot of finances, and this is a clear budget anyway, could we engage in a few questions on what has been said briefly, or do you want to finish the budget?
No, I do take your point that you've got to leave.
Yeah.
I'm sure members will understand. Rather than give you only the issues that you want to deal with and allow you to, and then we can deal with others later.
I'm very grateful that you organized this meeting on Friday, and I'm sorry that I can't sit through the whole thing. But because Tuesday taxes was my holiday. Could I just ask, how does the public see public and members of parliament, I'm thinking of ourselves in particular, fit into your very noble objective? If we have ideas of what we would like to see on the agenda, how do we participate? Because you don't, I don't think you have informal meetings with members of parliament. You possibly do with the executive and with all the people who have a more direct say in what happens. But the parliament is strengthening, and one would like to know how we can in the future keep getting into your objective.
Thank you, Chair. I think that that one of the other things that we'll see later in the presentation is that we've appointed a publications and communications manager. And one of the objectives of that is to see the way in which the Academy can not only disseminate the reports that it actually produces, but the way in which it can engage more generally with the public. And I think that what we will need to do in the future is become more actively involved in engaging with Parliament. And obviously the Academy also welcomes the opportunity to discuss major issues of concern with any constituency that happens to be interested in a particular issue. And when we are in the process of conducting some of our studies, what we generally do is we hold workshops of various kinds, often in different centres in the country, so not everything happens in Gauteng, in which we invite people who may have an interest in making presentations to the Academy or to the members of that particular panel to actually come and do so. And we try to invite a broad range of speakers, not just people who are members of the Academy, but other people who may have divergent views or interesting pieces of information that they would like to present. So I think those are the main ways in which we've tried to interact with the community more broadly, and it's generally in the context of the specific studies that we undertake.
Thank you.
Perhaps, Chair, I could just make one other point. I think that what we need to do is we in the past have had an annual meeting with the DST to engage with them on the major issues of national concern that the Academy should be addressing. But I think that what we probably need to do is to expand those kinds of engagements, and perhaps we can come and have an engagement with Parliament about the issues that they see of national concern which the Academy might be asked to address.
Yeah. So maybe what we can do is to say things that Dr. Robin would just give you a mailing list of members of this committee and members of the Academy, so that the activities that are open to the public or those to, I think, my interest members, just send the message to them so that those who are available can go, doesn't have to come by the chair or anything. Just to say, those happening, an open invitation. And secondly, you know, some of the good work that you do does not seem to be reaching out the way it should. All complaints. Obviously, we need just to tighten them and to check how available are some of your panel reports in the Library of Parliament. You see, you need to have some collaboration with them so that they can have some of your reports here so that if members need them, they can really access them.
Thank you, Chair. I think that what we will do is we will put the members of this committee on the mailing list for the publications so that you get them regularly. We try to distribute the publications as widely as possible, and we'll just check to make sure that we are distributing them effectively in Parliament. The other thing that we do is the publications are also all available on the website of the Academy. They're all in PDF format, and so we try to make them as widely as possible to people who are connected. But we also recognize that there is a large group of people who don't access things in that way. And so that's why we've always maintained the paper-based versions that we can distribute as well. But from an international perspective, it's very useful to have the publications available directly on the website. And I'll say a little bit more about open access later on in the presentation.
Yes, Honourable Chair and members of the committee. Just to add, one of the challenges as a small academy we actually recognize is the need to strengthen our marketing and communication profile. And as a small organization that actually has a small profile because we're small. And as a direct response to that challenge, we just recently made an appointment of a marketing and communications officer. So in a way, this actually, and in response to that, we need to actually say, from now on, we are very well positioned to be able to address that challenge. Thank you.
No, that's fine. I think we must have some collaboration with our country within the DSA. We are also having a similar problem. So that particularly the small ones who don't have big budgets can collaborate in terms of particular marketing and communication. It's a weak area generally. I can give an example now. AISA has got the same problem. And I think you can have some sort of collaboration. First time I come to the party here. So they do have some results of communication. So, okay, thanks, Dr. So we're going forward also the health problem.
Yeah.
But we've got an unbroken record here.
Thank you, Chair. The financials are relatively straightforward for the Academy. You can see that we have a total anticipated income from sources in South Africa of about 9.6 million. It's made up of the main NGEF grant to the Academy from the DST of 3.3 million. And then we have a set of three line items there that relate to the funding of specific activities of the Academy. The one is a ring-fenced amount for the publication of Quest, which I've mentioned previously. There was an additional inflationary adjustment for this financial year, 300,000. And then we are being contracted to implement aspects of our scholarly publishing report. And I just need to briefly comment on that. Academies of Science generally undertake these authoritative reports and make recommendations. And then they hand them over to various government departments and other agencies with the idea that hopefully some of the recommendations will be implemented. Now, we had discussions with both the Department of Science and Technology and the Department of Education, and we were asked then to implement some of the recommendations of our scholarly publishing activities, which is an unusual thing for an academy to do, but I believe that it's in our particular context, it's important that our academy doesn't behave necessarily like other international academies, but that we need to become involved in the implementation. And so that line item which you see there is to implement some of those recommendations. The next item is the membership fees, which is a relatively small amount. And then we get some funding from, we get some money from interest, and we get some revenue from our publication. And that gives us the total amount of our operating budget. If I could just go to the consolidated budget of the Academy, you'll see that 9.6 million is broken down into our four programs. The first program has to do with administration and governance. That's approximately 1.7 million. Then the aspects of publishing science and technology in South Africa is 5.7 million. Our international academies relations are approximately 400,000. And then our national and regional activities are 1.7 million. So that's the way in which we break it up into the four programs. I think that I should just give you a brief insight into what we're doing with the National Academy of Science of the U.S. We get approximately 1.6 million, it varies from year to year, depending on the activities that we put forward and the exchange rate, because that has an influence on what we get. But in essence, the program is meant to run for 7 years. We're at the end of year four at the moment, so we have another 3 years to go. And one of the reasons why I mentioned the diversification of income streams, because at the end of this period, this funding will disappear. But in essence, what they do is they make a pro rata contribution to start costs. For the staff who are working on these programs. They have assisted very significantly in developing the capacity of the Academy to undertake the studies that I've mentioned to you. And they also support very strongly the international activities, which is essentially enhancing the activities of the network of African Academies. And that has been very useful for us to establish very good relations with the other academies on the continent. And then finally, what they do is they sponsor agreed studies which we're undertaking, and they sponsor agreed committee activities which we undertake. These studies and the committee activities are driven by committees within our academy. So if our academy decides what the topics are going to be and how they're going to be executed, and then we obtain some funding in order to be able to do that from this source. And they can sometimes assist us with some of the international expertise that we may need to access to actually conduct the study. These are the four programs, and I'll deal with them very briefly. The first program has to do with administration and governance. In the top right-hand corner, you'll see an example of our newsletter, which looks something like this. In this particular newsletter, we were saying goodbye to our previous executive officer, who was Professor Dylan Gerber, who was very largely instrumental in establishing the basis of the Academy as a working organization. What we do in this particular program is that we identify what we need to do in relation to the Academy's role. We mobilize members to work on various committees, And that those committees then produce the kind of reports that we're talking about. We've established a finance group, which has been formed in the past financial year to advise the council and oversee the finance. And we have also, what isn't on the slide, established a human resources group, which advises the council on the appointments, promotions, and so on of the staff of the academy. Because our academy staff has gone from 3 to 16. So we're getting into the point now where we need to be much more formal about the way in which we run these activities. As I mentioned there, the executive officer retired at the end of April, and Professor Dia, we are very pleased to be able to welcome her as the new executive officer of the academy. She's from the University of KwaZulu-Natal. As far as the membership is concerned, we're looking at ways of exploring widening participation in the activities of the academy. That relates to the question of the Honourable Member Glenn. But we're looking at interacting with some of the youth organisations within the fields, particularly what's called WAYS Africa, which is the World Academy of Young Scientists. And the person who is the African representative of that works in the CSIR. So we're having discussions about how we can widen participation in the activities of the academy. We're also looking at ways in which we can enhance the role of members in regional and national activities, and we do that by way of looking at the regional composition of our panels and our committees, but we also do it by way of organizing public lectures in the major centers in the country. There's a very well-established series of lectures which was held in Cape Town, which is the most active of the international chapter, and then there are also lectures which are held in Durban and in Bloemfontein and in Gauteng from time to time. So I think those offer a way of showcasing some of the activities of the academy, and particularly the activities of some of their members. Then the staff and infrastructure, I've made a few comments about that. We've been strengthening the academy and developing the skills of the staff and in order to develop the activities that the academy does to the kind of professional level that we think is important. We're also starting to monitor and evaluate the activities of the academy to see what impact our studies are having. And as we've mentioned to you previously, we're also in the process of developing our marketing and communication to make that more effective. So we have a publications manager and a communications officer in order to do that. And I think one of the things that you'll see is if I hold these three together, we'll see that they have a very diverse look to it. What we're doing is we're looking at rebranding it so that there's a consistent look and feel to the publications of the academy, so that when you get something in your hands, you'll immediately recognize it as coming from the academy. Strategic aspects of publishing in science and technology in South Africa. We are in the process, as I said, of implementing the 10 recommendations of the 2006 report. The activities that we're involved in, we're doing a follow-up study of publishing book chapters for the Department of Education, which is nearly completed. We've established a national scholarly editors forum for all the editors of scholarly journals, where we can discuss issues of codes of practice in editorial activities, and that was extremely well attended. And the outcome of that editors forum is the adoption of a national code of best practice for editorial work and for peer review. There's also been a mandate given by the Editors Forum for a group to be established to do a peer review of South African scholarly journals. I'll just make a brief comment about that. There are a number of South African journals which have a high international profile. There is another group of South African journals, and there are roughly about 264 of them. There's another group of the journals which has never been, in which the work that is published in those journals has never been cited by anybody. So you have a huge spectrum from the one hand of some journals which have relatively high international reputation to journals at the other end where you need to ask yourself whether it's worth wasting the trees to publish the material. And so we're in the process of establishing a group to peer review scholarly journals to give the editors some idea of what we think the value of the journals is and perhaps what they could do to try and change the situation that they find themselves in, if it's necessary. What we're also doing is we're looking at establishing an online course system for scientific writing. As I mentioned to you earlier, in conjunction with the Inter-Academy Medical Panel, we held a workshop. But our feeling is that the workshop reaches 20 or 30 individuals. And the demand for help with scientific writing is very much larger. And so together with the Inter-Academy Medical Panel, the South African Academy is looking at developing an online course which will help people with scholarly publication and which will be made available internationally. And then we currently have a task team which is looking at the question of open access for publishing in South Africa. If I can just put it very bluntly, the current mode of publication of scientific work is it's free to publish and you pay to read. That's what it boils down to. The open access mode is that you pay to publish and it's free to read. So it's the opposite. And it's not actually obvious to us which is the most advantageous way of going. There is a notion that open access publication is wonderful because all material is free for anybody to read. The real difficulty with the open access movement is it creates huge barriers to the publication of work because you have to pay to publish in order for it to become open access. And what we're very concerned about with some of the open access movements is that it may create a much higher barrier for scientists who are working in developing and underdeveloped countries to actually publish their work. So I think we need to look at this very carefully because it's not simple and straightforward. And certainly one of my Indian colleagues has said he much prefers the free to publish and pay to read method because at least the work that's being produced is published somewhere. And there isn't that barrier to publication. So I think that's an area which we're going to have to look at very carefully and then perhaps make some recommendations to the Department of Science and Technology. We're developing an investigation which will cover data curation and these open access issues. To continue with the publications, we publish the quarterly magazine Quest, which I've mentioned. We've talked about the publications manager. In terms of Quest, we have partnerships with DST, Department of Education and Staff, and some of the science centers around the country in order to distribute the magazine as widely as we can. Because we think it's more important that that this magazine should be in the hands of learners so that they can see what's happening in South African science and perhaps encourage them to move in those directions. So we're looking at distributing it as widely as possible. And we're looking at its potential use and impact in future training programs as well. So I think that gives you an idea about Quest. Then finally, the South African Journal of Science. This is probably one of the premier science journals which is produced on the continent. It ranked 23rd out of 50 journals that are published internationally. So we believe that that's a fairly significant recognition of its international impact. The editor is retiring at the end of the year, and what we've done is we've established a new editorial model for the journal, and we're in the process at the moment of advertising to get a new editor-in-chief who will not be a full-time editor, but who will be doing new work on a part-time basis. The journal is available electronically on Savinet, but we are thinking of going the open access route, and we might have to introduce a third process which is free to publish and free to read, but that's an extremely challenging business model, and we still have to look at that, because as you can imagine, it's actually not free. Because you involve the time of editors, you involve the time of typesetters, and you have to have somewhere where you store all this information on a computer which has to be maintained, etc., etc. So there's some really significant challenges to the open access model that we're looking at. And as I've indicated, if our vision is to be the flagship national journal for the South African Journal of Science. I think it's probably there already, but you can never be complacent about the fact that you will stay there. So we need to look at that very carefully. Then a brief overview of our international relations. We're a member of FARDI, which is the African Science Academy Development Initiative, which is funded by the US National Academies, and I've talked about that. We're the vice president of the Network of African Academies of Science. In relation to the inter-academy panel, we've been very involved in two aspects: the water research, in which we ran a workshop together with the Water Research Commission, and in science education programs, where we've run a workshop on science education locally, and where we're still actively engaged. The Inter-Academy Medical Panel, I talked about the scientific writing program. Together with the Academy of Science of the Developing World, which is TROS, we have an annual prize for young scientists, which is funded by TROS, and the Academy advertises for nominations and then identifies the young scientists for those awards. The GH+5 Academies, South Africa is one of the +5, and so the South African Academy of Science is included in those meetings with the other academies. As a result of our interactions with the GH+5 Academies, we're in the process of exploring a bilateral agreement with the Chinese Academy of Science, as well as the Indian Academy of Science, because the last three academies of science believe that there is commonality in the way in which our S&T systems operate, and that it would make sense for us to have bilateral agreements with those two academies, and we're exploring those at the moment. And then in the past financial year, we entered into a bilateral agreement with the Ugandan National Academy of Science, and there's some joint activities that we're going to be involved with. And then finally, our national and regional activities. As I mentioned briefly in my introduction, we have two gold medals which we award annually to individuals who've made a particular contribution to science, but in addition to that, have made a very significant contribution to the public benefit that's derived from their science. We have the Sydney Brenner Fellowship. Sydney Brenner, if I could just mention to the committee, is a South African from Boxburg who is a Nobel Prize winner. And as part of the money that he got for his Nobel Prize, he donated some of that money to the Academy of Science for the establishment of the postdoctoral fellowship, which we also make available on a biennial basis. And the donation that he made was also matched by the Oppenheimer Trust, so that we can actually offer an additional postdoctoral fellowship for people to work in institutions in South Africa. It's open to any institution in the country, and we have a process which we use to evaluate the nominations and then award the fellowships. We have the regional public lectures, which I mentioned to you, and then we have the annual an annual visiting lecturer who comes to the country and goes around the country and gives lectures on a particular subject. And then these are the national awards. The international awards, of course, include the Academy of Sciences, the Developing World Postdoctoral Fellowship, which is also offered locally. And then, just to give you an idea of some of the reports that we've been involved in, we had a major report last year on HIV, AIDS, TB, and nutrition. And that the recommendations that were made in that report are being followed up at the moment. And the follow up is to develop a study of some of the issues that were raised in relation to nutrition, particularly micronutrient deficiencies in nutrition. So we follow that. We've also started a new study this year, a consensus study on clinical research in South Africa, and that's an ongoing study at the moment. We're starting a new study which is to review the national capacity in the humanities and the social sciences, because anecdotally we believe that the capacity in the humanities and social sciences is not what we would expect for a country of South Africa's size and development, and we need to try and identify what some of the issues are. Together with the National Science Foundation, the National Research Foundation, and some other stakeholders, we're also about to embark on a study of postgraduate studies in South Africa, and what we would need to do in order to significantly increase the number of postgraduate students who were produced in the country. Because, as the committee probably knows, it's part of the 10-year plan of the Department of Science and Technology, as well as the plan of the National Research Foundation. We've also been exploring an issue which relates to biosecurity, and we may or may not carry out a study on biosecurity. We're still evaluating what the potential there is. Then science education enhancement is another study that's been proposed, and we're exploring whether we should do that. The postgraduate study and human capacity development I've already mentioned. And everything that we have is on the website if you have access to the website. Thank you very much, Chair.
Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, Bob. I think it's quite useful. On the note of the NRF, I think if there's anything else, I would invite the doctor here to say anything about particularly the invitation that is extended to members. I think it's on Monday. Members should have received it. On Monday, those who are available to attend the South African PhD project then. Coming Monday.
It's coming Monday.
Yeah. Anything else we need to know?
Not at all, Chair. Just again to re-emphasize, I think the partnership not only with AFAF but the DSC and the need to push forward with the production of more and more doctoral students and graduate students. And of course, that means that the pipeline has to be not essentially just at the tail end of it, but ensuring that whatever, at the undergraduate level, and that even at secondary school, to try and enhance those conditions. So I will answer any other questions
now. No, that's fine. I just wanted to. I will check that because we did say
members should attend this, and there's an open invitation. What we need, maybe after this meeting, or even, is to take names of those who will be available to attend, so that we can process it today for members to be there. But the invitation is well received. Yes, of course. I think I'm going to open this for members to engage on. Just a few things, just to remind you about what you said earlier, in terms of marketing and so on. I think you've got your that's in a row already. And that's a convener or coordinator of the core. I think your job is even becoming much more central. And so, you are the secretariat of the core. What is second? What is the role of the NRF then? Are they also just being coordinated now?
The NRF is a member of Kahava.
Yeah.
So the NRF, the CSIR, all the other science councils.
I thought that they were coordinating the call before.
No, it only happened, Chair, if I may, that at the time the NRF president was the chair of cohort. And that rotates that, you know, amongst the cohort members.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I see.
Chair, what happened previously is that the secretariat rotated amongst the science council, so whoever was the chair of cohort. At that particular time, took on the secretariat role. Last year, what happened was that the members of cohort then asked ATAP to take on the role as of the secretariat for cohort. And so that means that irrespective of who's the president, the actual secretariat function lies with ATAP at the moment.
Yeah. And you do have the capacity?
We have the capacity to do that.
Okay.
And we charge.
Alright, so can I open this to members to engage? You've heard the Bob Zuck
Mr. Chairman, can Professor Crew just mention that name again, because apart from myself and Miss South Africa and Kari Kutia coming from Boxburg, I'd like to hear that one again.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, no, can I ask the question? Are you teaming up with Brazil and India as far as academies are concerned up to this stage because of the ITSA agreement?
Yes, we are. We've had a specific engagement with the Indian Academy of Science, and we're in the process at the moment of actually developing a bilateral agreement between ourselves and them. In relation to the Brazilian Academy of Science, which is a very well-developed Academy of Science and has a long history, and I think that interaction with them can be very helpful. At the G8+5 meetings, I had a long discussion with the president of the Brazilian Academy of Science, who is currently also the president of the Third World Academy of Science. And what we discussed there is that the Third World Academy of Science wants to hold its annual meeting in Cape Town in 2009. And so with DST, we've agreed that we will act as the host for that meeting. And we think that meeting would be a good opportunity to sign the agreement between the Academy of Science of South Africa and the Brazilian Academy. So we're in the process of working on that as well.
Is there another
question?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I had another one. Are any of the publications available? Do you make it available to technicons and technical colleges? And how is it accepted? Because I think that's really where it can play a major role.
Let's do this. Let's check that you've exhausted them because I'm not coming back now. Is there another one?
There was one that the professor said that they were referring certain things to the department. And I wonder if that should not, if you don't get assistance there, if you fail to really get satisfied, whether you should not at times also report to this portfolio committee, maybe we can assist.
Thank you, Chair. We noted that line of communication. That would be very helpful. Thank you. I'll ask Dr. Marty just to comment on the distribution of the publication.
Yes, honourable member. Regarding the publication, as mentioned earlier, that we're actually now in the process of strengthening our publication, marketing, communication, and distribution system. Currently, what we actually have in terms of our stakeholder database are heads of the universities, technicons, and science councils, and because those institutions are our direct stakeholders in terms of the distribution of the publication, of course, together with members of the academy and also parliamentary portfolio committee and also the government department. So what we actually need to do now, and because we want to massify and to expand our profile, is to filter that distribution process down from the top leadership of this institution to the people who matter most. That is the lecturers in the various departments, and they will use this publication, and also to the students, like we're doing, for instance, with Quest distribution in the school. So that's the plan. Thank you.
Okay.
You must use the line of communication very carefully. You don't want the DSC not to fund you. Mr. Lord?
Thank you.
Just before you speak, this is the political head of the committee. The work of the committee.
Thank you. I just want to check. You said that you are a new kid, you know, in the block. So I just want to check what gaps are you feeling, you know, as a new kid. For instance, what are you bringing in, you know, to make sure that the big brothers are learning from you. And also, I just want to check from you today that the magazines are good, but have you done a research around, you know, the reading part of it, because we should make awareness of this reading, because it will be useless for you to produce more and more, although maybe you are regarded as not a reading nation. What research has been done around that issue? And also, I'm glad that now you have realized that it's good to be an agency that provides information to the department, but you want to be involved in the implementation part of that. I just want to check from now on, the work that you've been done, what percentage can you raise yourself to say this was, you know, implemented by the department so far, so that you can, when you do the implementation, at least you know that departments are using the information that you're bringing forward. Thank you.
Thanks,
Jay.
I'll answer your question, Dr. Marty, to just comment on the research that we've done in relation to the publication. I think that there are two aspects of being a new kid on the block. The one thing is that you have to establish your profile and your track record. So I think that we're in the process of doing that. If you have a long history, you essentially have established your profile and your track record. So I think that's one of the challenges for us. The second is that for academies of science, they need to analyze exactly what the science system in their own country is like. So what the National Academy of Sciences does in the US, or what the Brazilian Academy of Science does in Brazil, is driven by the particular political structure and methods of supplying advice that there are in that country. And so, although we had a look at some of the models that they use in the United States, they actually are not models that you can simply take and apply in South Africa, because the structure of our democracy is different from their structure, particularly in the way in which the political organization is done. And so you then have to adapt the processes that you use in order to make sure that what you're doing is appropriate for the local situation. And so I think that what we've done is we've indicated to them that although they gave us models and said you should follow these models, we said these models are not going to work. And so we've adapted the models in various ways. And I think they're beginning to understand with their engagement with the African Academies of Science that their models are not simply transferable. You can discuss the relative merits and so on, but you actually have to look for a solution. Which is specific to your own country, and I think that's been one of the most important recognition for us. And very interestingly, it was one of the people in the Dutch Academy of Science who also alerted us to the fact that this was one of the most important things to understand and make sure you get right. In relation to the implementation, I think that we will become involved in implementation, but as you can see, the academy is a very, very small activity. So, what we prefer is to have a discussion with the particular government department before we do a study, to say this is what we intend to do, and we think that the outcomes may actually have some implications. And may need some implementation. And so we would prefer to have that discussion in advance and see whether the implementation can be done appropriately there. In the case of the scholarly publishing issue, I think it is our job to do the implementation because scholarly publication is something that an academy does. So I think it flows naturally from that. But it may not flow naturally from some of the other studies that we do, particularly for instance in the health domain. I mean, in the health domain, the academy simply doesn't have the capacity, and it doesn't have any kind of authority to do that sort of thing. So I think that there we would have to engage with the role players who would need to do the implementation. And then I'll ask Dr. Martin to comment on the survey of the research publication.
Yes, honourable member. One of the key components of the activities that we actually do, and we also reported on as the academy, is the monitoring and evaluation component of the work we do. So what we actually do there is that whenever we've got a workshop or we publish a report, the dissemination process is also linked with a follow-up. For instance, with the nutrition report, and also QUEST, which is distributed to the schools and also to other organizations. So the follow-up component is a survey questionnaire that was actually taken to the members. And now that we're beginning to strengthen also our marketing component, we getting involved in the science activities that actually take place in the country, where we actually take the publications and in terms of the marketing and component, we interface directly with the stakeholders. Like for instance, we recently attended the National Science Week, where we interfaced with the people who came there, and because we had a stall, so we had a direct interface, not only in the form of questionnaires, but we've also taken our publications to the research schools, to universities, like the nutrition report, for instance. We've taken them the publications to the schools that actually teach, for instance, the subjects around the area, so that the teachers there can use the publications as a resource for learning, but we also get feedback so that we can be able to, as a follow-up exercise. Thank you.
Can I just add something? As a recent appointment, one of the tickets that I came in on was a quest to try to improve the profile of the academy. I think as a young academy, we've consolidated. We now need to move towards improving our relations with government departments with the public and so on. So that's what one of the objectives of my new appointment will be, is to try to improve the profile. We're working hard on it, and we thank you for the contribution you've made about interacting directly with the public committee and something we will work on. And then just to elaborate on what Dr. Martin said, is that first we interact directly with the schools, and we had a lot of feedback about particular topics that the school teachers actually want us to address. So this is certainly something that we think we're going to be able to act on. It's not only our ideas that are going into the magazine, but they're coming from the teaching fraternity as well, giving us ideas that we want to go into the magazine. So this will be something we're addressing as well.
has resulted in significant request from the Department of Education and the Department of Science and Technology to work on the implementation of those recommendations. And I think you will see the outcome of that in the next 2 or 3 years as they work through. As far as the report on HIV, AIDS, TB and nutrition is concerned, that was launched in August last year, or released in August last year. And the process of following up on the implementation of some of those recommendations is ongoing. There are, in a sense, two components to that. One component is the study on clinical research. The other component of that is to look in much greater detail about the question of micronutrient deficiencies and the impact that they are having on health. And the third thing is that we're having an engagement with the Medical Research Council about the way in which some of the research issues can be addressed. As far as the Centres of Excellence is concerned, some of the leaders of the Centres of Excellence are our members. And we certainly engage with Centres of Excellence in terms of looking at them as potential sources of material that can go into the South African Journal of Science and into Quest, so that the work that they do can be much more generally distributed to the public at large, and particularly to the learners, because I think that both the Centres of Excellence and ourselves see that establishing a good pipeline of individuals who could come into science and technology is one of the main objectives that we would try to achieve. And then on the question of what scientists are thinking, that encourages me a great deal. That you ask that question. There are two ways in which we can approach that. The one is that our reports, in essence, give you an indication about the way in which a group of individuals are thinking about a particular problem. But the methodology that you use to produce a report is a relatively long-term one. They take between a year and 18 months to complete. And very often Parliament wants to get a sense of what scientists are thinking. There may be a particular issue which comes up, and you may want to get a sense of what it is that scientists think about a particular problem. I think that one of the ways in which the Academy can help is that you could say to us, Parliament is interested in this particular subject. Is there a member of yours who is an expert in this area, and you could come and talk to the Portfolio Committee about it? And what we could do is to try and facilitate the process that individuals could come and make presentations to the Portfolio Committee or discuss with you the issues that you find particularly problematic about a particular subject that may be coming up. So those are two ways, at least, in which I think we could help with the interaction with the committee. I would like you to see the Academy as a resource, and if you want to use the resource, you can ask us, and if we're able to help, we'll do it.
Thank you very much, industrial chat.
Chair, that part of the bill has already been paid.
Could I just add another response to your very first question about science and mathematics education? As you said, we're in the process of establishing an evidence-based study that will address science education in the country. But that's more at a strategic level, and it's a long-term investigation. But immediately, we have been asked by school teachers to try to address the problem and help with their school curriculum directly. So we're in the process of thinking, how could we address that through Quest? We don't want to make Quest the magazine that directly addresses the school curriculum, but there may be a way in which we could perhaps have some sort of insert or perhaps some regular feature that addresses directly the curriculum that would assist learners and school teachers, as well as making it a magazine that encourages people more broadly to become investigating in science and so on.
Did you bring copies for them?
Enough. Okay. Yeah. I was just about to say that there is danger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a lineup here. I've seen you across the show. The lineup that I have here is Mr. Morkel, Mr. Blanchet, and then Professor.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, an academy, I imagine, by very nature, is a group of elite individuals who've achieved a certain level of education to be classified or categorized as a core scientist, because you need to achieve a certain level of academic excellence. But there wasn't clarity on whether the academy works with all scientists, and then amongst all scientists, whether they are the professionally registered scientists or not, because some I imagine haven't registered with the relevant professional organization, and whether you evaluate that as well. Secondly, are we dealing here with criteria for membership that could lead to some exclusion of some sort or another? Is there any of that? And here particularly, have you seen research being done by people who've been drilled publicly for their views, labeled as dissidents or quacks or whatever? How does the academy engage with differences in views expressed by scientists? I note you talk about consensus studies, and I wanted to know what that means exactly. Is it something that has a majority and a minority report? How do these things work? That's the one area I wanted to touch on. Then also, I suppose, would be criteria. Is there some indication of a sort of template that would define what a major issue of national concern would be, or is it, you know, can anyone just bring anything to you and say, well, this, in their opinion, is a major issue of national concern, such as the Department of Science, Technology, Education, and others? But beyond that, let's say those departments don't recognize a particular issue as a major issue of national concern. Now, I want to highlight an example that if you speak to fishing communities who have survived under rock lobster industry, as an example, they would argue that the scientists conducting research on marine living resources employed by marine and coastal management, part of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, are not conducting, in their opinion, as a community or as an NGO representing particular communities, proper research, scientific research, and that they know where the rocks are, and they do not have the scientific credentials, but they know where it is, and they say these scientists are looking wrong. Now, they may require some peer review or independent research to satisfy those communities that the research methodology employed by the researchers at marine and coastal management are scientific methods. So I ask you, is that also part of your mandate in doing research of a major issue of national concern? Noting that the lobster industry, as an example, only covers more than two or three provinces. I'll leave it for there. And just to end up on a positive note, I think the work you're doing with Quest and focusing on scholars and youth in particular is excellent. Just one minor question there: at which level do you write the publication? Is it the secondary level, or are you catching them early at primary school level when they still have a chance to decide later on, do I focus on that in science or not?
Thank you, Chair. If I could answer the question first about the membership. The answer is that the members have to fulfill two criteria. The one criterion is that they have to be recognized as leaders in their particular field of expertise. And we're not particularly interested in whether they're professionally registered or not. That's not an issue. The issue is what contribution have they made to the field. So for instance, you may get an engineer who works in an institution who does very, very significant research and is regarded as a leader in their field, but he may not be professionally registered. So that's not an issue that's of interest to us. However, the reverse is also true. You may have a professionally registered engineer who is active in the public or the private sector and who's making a really significant contribution to the development of the profession and in also to the development of the country. And we will look at both of those criteria for the election of the member. So I think that we try to not have any exclusion outside of that, which would prevent people from being elected as members. And as I've said, we also have a very, very broad membership. It goes from the authors and the sociologists and the psychologists to the nuclear engineers on the other side, if you think of that as a spectrum. But it's a very broad membership. And we've always thought that the broad membership was a powerful asset of the academy because it brings a whole diversity of view to bear on a particular subject. And so that brings me to the issue that you raised, which is differences of opinion. I think that what the academy tries to do in its evidence-based studies is to establish what the factual basis is for a particular issue that needs to be addressed. And that's done by putting a panel together of people who may have divergent views. And the methodology that we use is that before the panel begins, each panel member has to state what their position is on the issue that's being investigated. They also have to state what their actual affiliations are, because what we're very interested in is potential biases before you start the study, not later when you get into the fight. So in other words, we may exclude panel members from participating in the study if we believe to give you an example, if you were studying something that had to do with the pharmaceutical industry, and one of the panel members was the CEO of the pharmaceutical company, we would exclude them from the panel. What we would attempt to do is to get them to give their views to the panel, which the panel could take into account. So the methodology for establishing the panel is to ensure that all of the panel members know exactly where the other panel members are coming from, what their backgrounds are, etc. And then they engage with the actual evidence itself, and then they produce the recommendations. The consensus is in relation to the recommendations. And so we have no minority reports or anything of that kind. They either come to a consensus or we don't publish the report. That's the way in which the methodology works. And we think that that's quite a robust methodology, and it's likely to produce a report which would have public acceptance, because that's the objective that we have in mind. So the committee's produced the report. The report then goes to two or three independent peer reviewers. The council, then at the end of the study, appoints independent peer reviewers and asks them to give the council an opinion on the report. Once we have the opinion on the report, the members of the panel get a chance to respond to those things, and then we finalize the report. So it's quite a rigorous process that we use to produce the report. And we do it because the important thing for us is to protect the profile of the academy. You could very quickly destroy the credibility of the academy if you produced a report which people found to be flawed, or they thought that it was unprofessionally done. So that's one of the major things that you need to try and protect. Then in relation to the national concerns that you raised, we do identify studies by discussions with various government departments and so on, but we also have a process where we regularly canvass our members to find out what they view are national concerns. The other thing that we are very interested in is examples such as you produced of the rock lobsters. Now, one of the things you could do is you could say to the Academy, here is an issue which has been raised by a community, and the community doesn't have confidence in the research which is being undertaken by a particular group. And can the Academy make a comment on it? Now, the Academy would look at the problem and define how to address it. It could be addressed by a consensus study, but in a case like this, that's probably overkill. It could be addressed by making use of the expertise within the Academy, or it could be addressed by way of the Academy holding a workshop to try and assess what the issues are that needed to be addressed. So there is a range of ways in which we could address issues like that, and we would certainly welcome the opportunity to be engaged in that way. And then the final thing was about the quest, I think. I think that the level of quest is basically aimed at the learners here in the secondary school.
I just wanted to add something about the rock
lobster. Sure.
Just to use that as an example. I think increasingly you find that scientific investigations are not only in the natural science. They're broadening a lot to social science as well. And I think Dr. Kanisi will support me there, that many of the NRF supported centers of excellence have to have as a member of their panel a social scientist. So what you're basically talking about is local knowledge. A social scientist would very definitely be able to recognize local knowledge as being important to bring to bear on the solution of the problem. So I think the steps that have been taken by NRF and others to support basic scientific research in the natural sciences by including social scientists into that angle is a way of starting to address this kind of problem. Fully addressed at this point is a question we could ask. But I think it also relates to our membership. You know, we recognize that when we talk about science, we're not just talking about natural and physical science. It's a very broad membership. Okay?
Dr. Mahal, I just make a comment on
Quest. Yes, honorable. Just to add on Quest, the main target really on Quest, more than secondary school learners, but it's the youth, whether they are at school, whether at entry level at university, or even whether they are out of school, or even at college. The main thing really about Quest is to change the impression that the youth have about science, that it's a formal textbook-based subject that is only confined at school. You cannot find it in newspapers and in magazines. It's really information, you know. It's about them knowing their own environment, and also it's much broader than the syllabus. So that's precisely what we're actually doing in Quest, is to turn them on about science, particularly considering that there's a need to ensure that we develop future scientists amongst the youth. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm always worried about too many documents appearing and too many journals appearing in a country the size of ours. And I'm wondering whether it is not worth a while if you think about the buy or the knowledge that you're trying to pass on. It's in fact something you want to really get down to the lowest level. And if you have to go through all these channels of spending money in your journal and then maybe another journal as well, then it takes time and it costs money. Isn't there the solution, and maybe our department should consider this as well, the solution to try and convey knowledge to bring some of the government institutions on board, like for instance SALGA. And let me take a problem. Potholes is a problem throughout our country. The quickest way to solve the problem is if some engineer has found a solution to potholes. And I think the Swiss have already found it, but we should go have a look at it. I'll use that illustration as well. To then get that distributed countrywide to all municipalities fairly quickly is to get your paper on whatever you think is the solution to the problem to SALGA, so that the local governments have it published in their documents, and there you go. But then SALGA must become a member of your organization. And is not that what our department should be looking at? Try and bring more of our government departments and government organizations into your membership, so that if you do have it, you don't use your own printing documentation, you get your papers published through other channels. Would that be a solution?
Chair, I just want to add something to this, because I think it's a very important question that I didn't want to ask earlier because I asked so many questions already. But it's a very important point. The dissemination of the information that we research, reported in journals and other publications. The flip side of this is, if we put too much of our intellectual property out there, we run the risk of losing it to other countries who perhaps can develop and take a product to market quicker than we can. Now, so I'd like you to answer how we protect our intellectual property as well as make it available, and how do you distinguish between the two?
Okay, Tom will be last after that.
Shall I go? Yeah. Thank you. Chair, in relation to membership, the membership of the Academy is based on individual, and that's the way in which it's made up. But it leads to a broader question. The particular publications that we're talking about have a particular target audience, and they are designed specifically for those target audiences. But I think that the issue that you're raising is a very important one, and that is the critical information that's contained in that. How do you disseminate it to the point at which it's going to be implemented? And I think that that's a question that we still need to explore. I mean, as an example, the study on this is the design of heat pumps and electronic devices. That's an academic study of designing those heat sinks. The question is, how are you actually going to get that into the market so that those heat sinks are used to generate electronic devices in this country, which is going to generate economic activity? And I think that's another question that we might well have to address and see how we can make that translation. But then to come onto this intellectual property protection issue, as far as the Academy is concerned, we require the authors to give the copyright of the material to the Academy when it's published. What we are not involved in is the actual protection of the intellectual property that's contained in those articles. And that's an issue which involves a longer debate. Because for the institutions that are producing that research material, they have to make a series of decisions. The first of the decisions is the material that's being published sufficiently novel for it to be patented and therefore to be protected? And so the institutions have to make that judgment by reviewing the manuscript before it gets published. The second thing that they can do is they can ensure that they protect the intellectual property, and that they then allow the publication of the work. Because it's very, very important if you're going to maximize the commercial value of the discovery is to publish it, particularly to publish it in a peer-reviewed journal like this. Because very often the commercialization partners are looking for a scientifically verified assurance that what you're claiming as a discovery is actually a real discovery. So there are two sides to it. The publication is important, but you have to delay the publication so that you can protect the intellectual property. And even if you protect the intellectual property, you have to have very deep pockets to defend it. And that's one of the other problems that we are confronting. There's also a situation, I'm digressing a bit here, but let me just make one more point. There are some areas in which you make discoveries where the time to market is long. And one of the examples that I can give you is in the forestry industry. Because in fact the time to a proof of concept is a minimum of 7 years because you have to grow the tree. And only after that can you protect the intellectual property. If you protect it at the beginning, half of your period is gone before you actually can make any commercial value out of it. So I'm giving you that example to show you that the question of the intellectual property protection is actually a complex set of questions. And the institutions that are producing the research need to engage with those questions and to decide about the property protection as well as the publication. But if you've got a system that's working well, you need to delay publication by only 6 months to a year while you actually get the intellectual property protection in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Professor. Thank you, Chair. First of all, an apology for coming late here. I got my diary a bit mixed up. I went to listen to Ronnie Kelterov because I was interested in some security matters and totally forgot about this meeting. Professor Crewe, you know, I probably raised this, and colleagues, raised this matter before, you see, but something that's disturbed me a lot, really, some legislation, I can't remember the title of that now, which prohibited people from publishing things without having authorization from DST. And I said, I'm not interested. You're not going to do this to me. I won't publish in South Africa. I won't publish somewhere else, and you cannot stop me. You know, I argued with Marjorie Pius, we had lots of arguments about the bits of legislation, and they went ahead, and I said, oh, it doesn't matter to me, you go ahead, but you can't stop me from publishing somewhere else. But anyhow, that is by the way. What I want to comment about really is also, I always looked at your organization, and earlier on, you know, at my school days, I would have been very interested in it. But I look and I say, I meet somebody, a young boy, and I say, he's very bright, he's very good at mathematics, and what do I encourage him in? And he's very keen on the mathematics. I've shown him, and I've shown him Scientific American, and after the last few years, he's now in the second year at UCT, I've subscribed for him, and his parent system is over the wall with all that sort of thing, because he wants to read it, you see. Now the point I'm getting at, you see, there was a time I would have been interested in Quest, and I'm not saying it's not an interesting journal, but you have to parcel out your time. And I find, for instance, well, I work in group theory, except Parliament is cut short, is that you can't I can't look at any other mathematics. I haven't got the time for it. And so even very much less time for questions. So I think that's something that applies to a lot of other people. And probably then you are restricted to, well, I say restricted to, but it means the people at the schools and so on are your natural candidates to come in for those sort of things. So I just want to show that kind of problem you see here. And I don't know, but it seems to me from when I last looked at you that you've made very good progress. But also, you see, I see, well, I've looked at exhibitions, for example, science museums. I looked at the science museum at, here in Cape Town, and I looked at the exhibition of the tsunamis there, and I said, you know, this is so not fully explained really exactly what is happening there. Maybe it's a model which is, I'm not criticizing the scientists, maybe the model hasn't captured everything really. And really tsunami is a fantastic thing to understand what is happening. And I then wonder, and I see the little children who run past those things. And there are lots of things that just pass them by. And so I'm wondering whether in a way you also fall between two stools, that because I do a special kind of mathematics, and I don't expect that to be in question, maybe it is there, I don't know. And then at the other extreme, there are things which I haven't got the time to read, and I wonder whether other people are caught in that same kind of situation. And I'll tell you about the tsunami I've seen at the exhibition there, is that it's not adequately demonstrated how the wave builds up as it comes to the coast. Now it's very well understood theoretically, you see why that should happen. And it's a fantastic phenomenon. But I mean, really to understand that you need to look at theory and look at those sort of things. The pictures will help one in a way. I'm just saying, I wonder if Chris and so on don't experience this kind of problem. You see, I used the word which just sounded very arrogant. I've migrated from where I would have read certain magazines at matriculation level, first year university, more mathematics, and then special mathematics. In a very small section, I've got the time to read the other things. And I think many people find themselves in that. And I don't know if that is where you may have difficulty in probably also losing a certain customer area. I'm just raising that to see if you're aware that that kind of thing is happening. You see, there's something else that I saw in this committee. You see, I was part of passing a bit of legislation which I can't quite remember the title of, but basically you have to get departmental authorization to call yourself a scientist. And you couldn't publish certain things without authorization. And I said to Marjorie Paz, forget about it, I'm not interested in you. I can publish my mathematics abroad, I don't have to ask anybody. And you can't prosecute me for that. So there was dysfunction in a way. But anyway, I start off with a student, you see, so I look at the mathematics there also, and I think there are things which I would like to interest him in. And he has really progressed a lot in what he's doing. I listen to his parents, you see, and I'm just amazed actually what he has learned and read and so on. He's doing basically, I suppose, he'll be a physicist. Now I'm just saying, I think you are against that kind of problem, you see, and I said, actually, Michael Pius said to me, well, we will prevent you from publishing anything here unless you are registered. I said, no, I don't care what you're doing, that legislation was passed. I said, I don't care what you're doing, I won't publish in any South African journal. I will have to tell you the legislation afterwards, but this is about 4 or 5 years ago. Anyway, maybe I should stop at that there and not, I'm just commenting on that kind of difficulty, and I don't know whether
other people will come up with that, budding scientist and so on, to be prevented from publishing unless you have the recognition of the South African authority. Let me stop there.
Thank you, Professor. If you just finish on with that.
Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. Let me answer the question first, and I'll come back to the legislation later. As far as Quest is concerned, I think that you've identified the question of audiences for various journals, and I think that the difficulty that you outlined is one that a lot of people experience as they develop the more specialized areas of knowledge of their field. You become interested in reading these small areas that are of particular interest to you. But I think that in addition to being interested in those small areas, individuals very often want to get a flavor for what's happening in other fields. Now, at a technical level, you can have a multidisciplinary journal like this one, which will give you a high-level flavor of what's happening in a number of different fields. In most cases, individuals don't fully understand the details of what's being presented if it's not directly in their field, but they get a sense of where the field is progressing to. I think that for journals like Quest, the objective is to get individuals who haven't progressed to that point to be interested in a variety of fields. And so the target audience there, I think, is the young learners who could potentially enter those fields to get an idea of the spectrum of activities that they could go into. In addition to that, there are a number of interested lay people. The interested lay people don't want to read the Journal of Group Theory that you find particularly interested, because most of it would be completely beyond them. But they want to have a journal which actually interprets the work that you're doing and gets a sense of what the value of that work is and what its potential implications could be. So I think that what we would be trying to aim for is people who are attempting to get a general knowledge of what's going on in the field, as well as for the young learners to get a feel for it. But, I think that the dilemma that you've outlined is a very real one. And I think that in a sense, the way in which we address that dilemma is by producing publications which address different audiences, and you cater to those different audiences. And I hope we're successful in doing that. In relation to listening to you about the legislation, I think you're referring on the one hand to the intellectual property regulation act. The intellectual, if I could. Just make one comment about that, and I alluded to one of my answers to an earlier question. The bill attempts to regulate the way in which you should protect intellectual property, but there's a large dilemma, and the dilemma is that at the moment it's not that easy to actually distinguish whether you've got a piece of intellectual property that is worth protecting. So you have to go through a process of evaluation, and it's not simply self-evident. And people don't just wake up one morning and say, I've got this piece of intellectual property that needs to be protected. It develops as a result of their research activity. So what the legislation is attempting to protect is important, but the process by which you get there is not straightforward and not simple. And can create some difficulties. The other thing that you may be referring to is the Natural Scientific Professions Bill, or Act, I should say. And that in effect regulates the consulting work that natural scientists can do. But as far as I know, it doesn't regulate at all. And what is specifically excluded from that is the research activities of individuals. I mean, clearly, it's part of the constitutional rights which are enshrined in the Constitution, which allows you to explore an area of research in any way that you think is appropriate. That's part, I believe, of your individual freedoms, which are enshrined in the Constitution. And I hope that that's not attempting to be regulated in any way. Thank you.
Can I just say, I mean, that is about 10 years ago, you see, and basically it's the last thing that you mentioned. And I think there it was that people call themselves engineers and then want to put up structures for building, but they're not really qualified to do so. And the department wanted to regulate that. But the sledgehammer they used caught some other people in the process.
You know, I think the main preoccupation is to register the national license. To have them registered. I don't think in that law that's preventing people from publishing or whatever. And also to ensure that you don't have this fly-by-night go and build bridges and they collapse and they kick in and so on. And to discourage industry from employing people who are not registered. I think that's the essence of that. They're not doing that well in terms of registration, but that's, yeah. No, I must thank you very much for the presentation, and again congratulate you for your unbroken record of unqualified audit reports, you know. The Department of Science and Technology is well represented. I'm sure you've heard them. To say that there's not been what we're looking for throughout all the science councils now, that we should go with it. I was happy when you mentioned the Sydney Brianna Fellowship and Bongstock in particular.
Yeah.
I've got a member in the community who is very passionate about Bongstock. Whenever you mention Bongstock, you touch Mr. Blanchard. You see, it's an area, the last time I was in Bongstock, that area was 1993. I won't even mention the reasons why. I'll stop there. I think I'll go back to Boxburg.
You land in Boxburg when you go from here.
Okay. Oh, and then the collaboration with the Oppenheimer Trust. You think you can just, you don't have to give us the details now. Just to give us that collaboration and the impact and the postgraduate, doctoral degrees that you've taken through that. I'm also interested in how many people have gone through it. And also to see that the gender, race, profile is taken care of in that process. So you don't have to respond to it, but you can just send us something in mind. I don't know how we must get to time. Was there a party for the game?
No, we still planning one for the annual general meeting in November.
Oh, the party's in November.
Yeah.
So he's still enjoying his retirement. Oh, okay, no, that's good. We have a retirement now and have a party in November. Wow. I don't know. Scientists can plan very in a very unique way. I think we must just send him a letter of compliments from the committee. I don't know if you can make a note of it. And if you can just get this, I don't know if you need details on it. Congratulations. I don't know whether you fought those boots, but they were quite huge. Yeah, they were quite huge. But I don't in any way doubt your capabilities, but I'm just saying the challenge. The standard. Yeah, the salad is set, and I think you can just have, you have to that record has got to be surpassed, you know.
Even better.
And the publication, I don't know, let you say, to brand them, or have some sort of look and feel of your publication.
we just follow up this to just see how we're doing in the context. The money that is ring in your where is the coffee?
The aircon.
The aircon.
Yes.
I can't get here. It's 700,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
Is it over the 20 years or is it just for this year?
Just
for this year and for questions.
Yeah.
Now, the AFAT has received additional reinforced allocation of 500,000 for each of the years over the MTF period. So, what is that 500,000 for? You know what I'm talking about?
Ready for the other periods like 2009, 10, and so on. But for this current financial year, the reference amount was 500,000 initially. But
that night was the recording.
Yes, thank you. Initially, for the current financial year, reference allocation was 500. It started from 250. The previous year was 250. Then it has increased to 500. Then they gave us additional allocation of 200,000. That took it to 700,000. And that did it just for the current financial year, 2008-2009. They didn't get allocation. This is 700, just for.
What? How do they do it? Do they give you a letter that says it's given you 200 additional? The book that I have here that Parliament is going to adopt and approve is giving us a figure of 500,000. We are glad in this instance that they are getting more. But we have to just check where is that more coming from. You see, you can't be able to snatch money someone that you don't know about and not reflecting anywhere else. I'm not suggesting that you're doing that. We were worried about an organization that, in terms of our books, the rollover that is approved is 12.5 million. In their books, they got a letter that says the rollover is 6 million. So we try to check why all these discrepancies. I know that we are dealing with big bugs here, but at least we must just check that we don't hurry and rush to just write things down. Give us that letter that you sent to us now because we have to engage in line with them. Unless there are manager is giving us wrong figures as well.
Just to respond, actually, President gave us additional funding this year after we gave them the allocation that are last year in December. That's why, you know, there's an additional funding on the inflationary amount and also the press negative. It's not only after all the public entities we got 5 million, and the other 20 million was for implementation of the 10-year plan. We only got the letter this year, so there was an additional letter to all the public entities.
And then okay. We need that information, that's all you said. Yeah, send to the committee, so that we can look into these figures much more closely. Lastly, from my side, Prof. Salafan. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, no, we're about to finish. You got 2 minutes. 2 minutes talk will be done. You see, we the coordination of the council has been a thing that has been worrying us for some time. And we're happy that you've taken the secretariat and you must charge them double the amount, but we want to see proper that coordination becoming very proper. There is a lot of duplication of research that is happening in the council, and sometimes we are not talking to each other. There's a sense we're getting. So there's something, and the trend that we see, some scientists belong to more than one council, which is not a problem, but then they take their interest all over. And then we start to see the pattern of that influence getting into the councils and so on. We would want to discourage duplication of scientific work or research where possible, but to have some focus to say if people are looking into an area, use all the expertise that you have. But you can't many of them come to the committee to come and tell us about one people that they feel so passionate about. I just wanted to make that point. So the coordination, the series that you want to have between scientists and politicians, we are starting that process in a very gradual and methodical way. And we're happy that you volunteered to give us the resources to be there as a resource as and when we need. I think I'll leave it at that and just get to the closing comments, if any, from yourself and so on, so that Professor Mohammed can be left to go as well.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to say thank you for this opportunity to discuss the activities with the committee. We appreciate it a great deal. And just to make one additional comment which relates to your last one, and that is both in Uganda and in the United Kingdom, the Academy has been involved in pairing parliamentarians with particular scientists to allow for an interaction to go on for some time, which relates to the interest of the science and the particular interest of the parliamentarian. And that's an issue that we could explore sometime in the future.
No, we must start exploration now. You see, the research section of Parliament is weak. Okay? Very weak, but we've got a lot of scientific knowledge and research all over the country. But in here, when you need it, difficult to access. So we would be interested to look into those methods that they're using. You know, Australians, I'm told, have got a very good series that is consistently going on. The UK, you know, they've got post. I can tell you that we need something that can empower politicians as well. So that we don't talk and do things across each other all the time. You can see some of the problems that we have in the country, the advice that we go on and so on. There is a gap. We need to fill the lacuna that we have. So we will engage you as a resource on this one in particular, as well, Prof. and the team. Number, thank you very much. Lunch is here at the restaurant at 12:30. If you are available and not in rushing to the airport, maybe have a lunch with us here.
Get your magazine before you leave. Remember, next week Tuesday we start to get after tonight. If you want to get your after you also have your team have to come at 9 and go after 7.
Thank you.
with the term.
What can the chief parliamentary officer do to show you who he is?
I know when I heard you from Boxburg.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
I must tell Juma the good work that you're doing.
You know what?
Yeah.
Even see this television.
and be there on Monday, eh?
My mother's in? Oh, yeah. I'm all yours.